This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Aaron Mankey's Cabinet of Curiosities, a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild.
Our world is full of the unexplainable. And if history is an open book, all of these amazing tales are right there on display, just waiting for us to explore. Welcome to the Cabinet of Curiosities.
If you're a history fanatic like I am, then you know that the past is not gone. It's not even past. History lives on in the present, influencing the very shape of our world. The city of Hong Kong is a perfect example of that idea. Hong Kong is located on China's southeast coast. Today, it's considered a special administrative region of China. But that wasn't always the case. The story of Hong Kong involves multiple wars, occupations, and treaties, as well as one of the strangest lease agreements in world history. Beginning in prehistory, and yes, there is such a thing, Hong Kong was a territory of Imperial China. For many centuries, the country was sparsely populated. It wasn't until the late 1600s, during China's Qing Dynasty, that more people moved there and the region grew into an important trading port. Now, fast forward about 100 years to the late 1700s. China was trade partners with Great Britain. But the British Empire felt like it was getting the short end of the deal. They bought a lot of Chinese products, like tea, porcelain, and silk, but China didn't buy many British items in return. That meant that instead of bartering for goods, British traders had to pay in silver, and this was threatening to create a silver shortage in the UK. Britain's solution to this problem was, well, unethical to say the least. You see, at the time, the British Empire exercised colonial rule over India, and the climate there just so happened to be perfect for growing poppies. If you were big into world history in high school or college, you probably know where this is headed. Poppies were used to manufacture opium, a highly addictive and dangerous narcotic. The British Empire began creating huge quantities of opium and exporting the drug to China. And because it was so addictive, people bought it once and then kept buying it. Very quickly, the trade imbalance between Britain and China flipped. Beyond the fact that its own silver stores were now running low, China was worried about its people. Opium use spread like wildfire in the country. In an attempt to counteract this, the nation banned opium entirely in 1796. But British traders weren't interested in following Chinese law. They continued shipping opium into the country for decades. Finally, in 1839, tensions came to a head. The first Opium War broke out. The fighting lasted for 3 whole years until the British Army claimed victory. They negotiated a treaty that favored them. It not only allowed for British merchants to trade freely, but it also gave Britain ownership of Hong Kong Island. Still, though, the British Empire wasn't entirely happy. It wanted opium to be legalized across China. When China refused, the Second Opium War began. It lasted until 1856 and ended in another Chinese loss. This time, Britain gained a mainland territory called Kowloon, which was directly north of Hong Kong Island. Over the next few decades, the British Empire changed the region significantly. It expanded trade and turned the area into a bustling business center. At the same time, thousands of migrants were seeking an escape from political upheaval in mainland China, and many chose to move to these British-owned territories. And then came the strangest part. In 1898, the British Empire approached the Chinese government with a proposition. Once again, they wanted to expand their colonial rule. They didn't just want ownership over Hong Kong Island and Kowloon. They wanted total control over the 235 islands that make up modern-day Hong Kong. But they also made a slight concession. They didn't ask for total control of Hong Kong forever. No, they just wanted to lease it for 99 years. It had to be one of the strangest power grabs in history. It seemed pretty obvious that this was an attempt to expand their land holdings, but who knew if the UK would actually give Hong Kong back? Nevertheless, China agreed to these terms. And it doesn't appear that they started getting antsy about it until around 1980, when Chinese and British officials entered into negotiations about the future of Hong Kong. Perhaps because of how much the world had changed since the 1800s, Britain did something kind of shocking. They agreed to return Hong Kong when their lease was up. All they asked that China do in return was allow the city to maintain its capitalist economy and partially democratic political system. China said, okay, but only for the next 50 years. And after that, they would do whatever they wanted. Hong Kong was passed back to China in 1997, becoming the special administrative region that it is today. While the city's future is unclear, one thing is certain. History is decidedly curious.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
When we think of New Year's Eve, we often think of glitz and romance, champagne bubbles, midnight kisses, and of course, that famous ball drop. Whether gathered at home watching the Times Square festivities on TV or gathering in Times Square, most Americans have counted down to midnight alongside the ball. Times Square is the perfect location for such an event. The lights bathe the city-goers with the promise of a brighter future. It's easy to get lost in the glow. For a moment, you might even forget all those promises come in the form of advertisements, nothing more than what you'd see while scrolling through social media. In fact, the first ever ball drop was itself one big advertising scheme, and it drew its inspiration from an iconic landmark. The first New Year's Eve ball drop occurred in Times Square in 1907, but ball drops weren't a new concept at the time. The first time ball, as it became known, was constructed on top of the Royal Observatory in Greenwich, England in 1833. And it wasn't just for show. The ball drop signaled the hour of 1 p.m. In a time when people had to go to a professional to get their wristwatches properly timed, the ball allowed them to clock it themselves. When the ball dropped, people on the ground nearby would just stop, adjust the time on their watches, and then keep moving. But why 1 p.m.? Well, the ball didn't just help those on foot. It was especially useful to nearby sailors. This was important because if chronometers were even just a few minutes off, ships could go way off course. This original time ball functioned a lot like the New Year's Eve ball that we know today. First, it was hoisted up a flagpole by rope, and then it was held in place by an electromagnet until it was released at 1 p.m. Unlike the New Year's Eve ball, this one was made of paper light leather. It wasn't glamorous, but it got the job done. Given the success of the time ball in Greenwich, others were built around the UK. Then in 1877, the US erected its first one atop the Western Union Telegraph Building in Lower Manhattan. At 10 stories high, it was the tallest building in the city at the time. The ball could be spotted from blocks away. It was more stylish than those before it. Multiple copper sheets in the shape of crescent moons formed a sphere, while the slats between them allowed for the wind to flow. You can imagine the copper gleaming in the sun, while the East and Hudson rivers glittered not far away. Perhaps this sight inspired the use of a time ball for celebration, but not without some healthy competition first. You see, for centuries, Trinity Church, also located there in Lower Manhattan, hosted a New Year's Eve ringing of the bells. It was the city's main event. By the end of the 19th century, the celebration often drew thousands of people. Then, in 1904, the New York Times opened a new headquarters in what was then known as Longacre Square. The paper's owner, Adolph Ox, lobbied to change the name of the square, and thus, Times Square was born. But this was just the beginning of Ox's publicity campaign. He didn't just want to stamp the paper's name on the city. He wanted to steal the show. That year, he sought to outshine Trinity Church. And that he did. Ox put on an all-day street festival and set off fireworks when the clock struck midnight. The Times celebration repeated for the next 2 years until the city banned fireworks due to the hot ash they created. But Ox wasn't willing to step aside. Instead, he came up with a new idea. The Western Union Time Ball had become a source of both spectacle and pride, and its whole purpose was to mark the passage of time. This seems to have inspired Ox. The newspaper man hired someone to construct a ball made of wood, iron, and 25-watt bulbs. The final product was 700 pounds and 5 feet in diameter. That might seem small to us now, but at the time, it was quite a feat. And just like a time ball, it gave everyone a reason to pause and take stock of time together. The original New Year's Eve ball remained in use until 1920. Over the next few decades, the ball grew in size and style. Wood and iron gave way to stronger metals, light bulbs were replaced with crystals, and computerized LEDs. Today's ball weighs almost 6 tons, measures 12 feet in diameter, and is decorated with over 2,000 crystals and 30,000 high-powered LEDs. And each year, it descends 66 feet, and usually has some sponsor signage nearby. It is Times Square, after all.
I hope you've enjoyed today's guided tour of the Cabinet of Curiosities. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or learn more about the show by visiting curiositiespodcast.com. This show was created by me, Aaron Mankey, in partnership with How Stuff Works. I make another award-winning show called Lore, which is a podcast, book series, and television show. And you can learn all about it over at theworldoflore.com. And until next time, stay curious.